some free space, unknown paths, some curiosity, something that is not written in the script yet.
Aalto University Podcast.
This is Leading for Interdisciplinary Creativity, and I am your host, Irina Viippola. In this episode, we'll explore the essentials for making meaningful change, how to identify problems worth solving, and how to turn new ideas into thriving businesses. We'll also discuss ways to boost Finland's competitiveness through intangible value creation and the power of interdisciplinary cooperation. For anyone interested in creating change, there will be tips and resources on innovation worth noting. Get ready for a conversation rich with insights and inspiration from two seasoned innovation experts. Let's dive in. Welcome, Maija Itkonen and Lotta Partanen. I'm excited to have you here.
Great, thanks.
Thanks.
To start with, can you introduce yourselves? Maybe you can start, Maija.
Okay, so if I start, so my name is Maija Itkonen. I'm an industrial designer. I'm an IDBM alumni. I actually have a little bit different career than you would maybe expect for an industrial designer. So I currently work as a biotech company CEO. So I'm a sort of like, not maybe serial entrepreneur, but maybe serial founder, if you could say. Like this is my third startup. So I'm quite experienced on the startup field.
Excellent base for our discussions, I have to say. What about you then, Lotta?
I'm also a designer by background. I hold a master's in interior architecture, specialized in furniture design. And I'm an interaction designer, or I have a master's from new media, from the Media Lab in Taik. Yes. But actually I specialized in, you know, experience design in ubiquitous computing and embedded systems, IoT. I think a little bit before that some of those terms existed. And that led me to work for large corporations on innovation side. And that's when I discovered actually innovation as a career path. It didn't exist when we studied. There was no innovation design or innovation management at the time. So that has led me through several kind of large corporations on the consumer electronics funds to utility. And now I lead a spin-off incubator at VTT, at the Technical Research Center of Finland.
Oh, sounds really interesting. And of course, the startup and spin-off scene is quite active at the moment in Finland.
That's right.
So I'm sure that we can find interesting questions on that area as well. But to begin with, I would like to go more into how do you find these problems that are worth solving, or how to identify things that you feel that now, okay, let's dig into this theme.
Yeah, well, if I start from that, I think you can really approach this like from so many different directions, that either you can just like look at the surface and just to see like the big picture only. But when you go like narrow and narrow, you can actually find new problems always. So, for example, in my startups, the first one was purely just this idea and business potential that was driving it, and that the company started developing technology and acquiring the technology and so on. Then the second one was based on founders' PhD studies, but was not really like anything that tightly connected with the university. And then this current one is a true spin-off. So like very, very different take on the technology. But I think that's actually like, I would say like the first thing to recognize, that it's not so that, you know, like only the sort of problems or challenges that you just recognize today and you would need to start solving is worth solving. It's like all kinds of smaller problems like inside the box, if you would say. So for example, in this spin-off, you know, you have like certain technologies, but then what is it? How is it done? Where is it solved? What problem does it solve? And sort of like, you know, like all of these different like smaller angles inside this, like a core, what's your innovation type of thing. So yeah, I think it's you can really approach that like so many different ways.
Mm, and what gets you inspired? How do you then get involved with these new ideas and startups?
I have to say that, you know, like when I was younger, I was much more interested in just this larger, that, okay, you know, sort of kind of like once you have developed your idea, that's sort of like already halfway there. But now when I have become older, I've been more and more excited about than the how. Like I think someone said it nicely that like the real idea is the idea of execution. The idea, the creative idea is not yet the idea, but the idea of the execution is actually the real idea.
That sounds really excellent. And actually, in some of the other discussions that we've been having in this podcast series, we've been talking quite a lot about doing, not so much about thinking. And maybe this is also a little bit in the same field, that you just have to start doing. The how is important. What about you, Lotta? How do you see this? That how do you kind of find the problems that are worth identifying and what gets you inspired?
I must say I go really far back. I always thought I would become an engineer, and I did really extensive science mathematics studies in high school that reached already to the university level in some parts. And last year of high school, I realized I'm not going to be an engineer. And I quickly visited social sciences, political history. And I interviewed anyone that I saw in the corridors or whatever. I asked them, so what are you gonna do with your studies? What are you gonna become? And it didn't matter what they, you know, what level of study, you know, how far they were in their studies. No one could answer. And I thought, I need to get out of here quick. And then I got this grand idea that if I became a designer, I could employ myself because the world is full of problems that need solutions. And so I think I'm still on the same mission. I find that the world can be made a much better place, and I can't help it. I really believe in technology and applying sciences as a vehicle of or means of kind of creating this change and improvement. When you can actually commercialize it, when you kind of make it desirable, feasible, and viable enough, isn't it? You know, and I believe that, you know, somehow, you know, I'm old enough to think that, you know, people are just, we're just lazy. We're too complacent. We're not going to change our behavior, even though we know we should. Unless the behavioral change is made into something so delightful that I just want to do it, you know? And that's where we need real kind of effort in translating that opportunity of change created by scientific discovery into a value proposition that we'll all buy into, you know? So, you know, in a way, you know, I'm on this mission to kind of change the world. And so far, you know, development, you know, personal development is like a growth path. I've come to realize that, you know, that at the moment I realize that there is no truth. There is just a, you know, what I know of the matter right now, you know, but in a while I'll know something else. So currently my belief, and the truth for me is right now, is that the best vehicle of creating this, delivering this change is through growth companies. And why I do this is that I have worked in the corporations, you know, my past career before joining VTT. And I was so frustrated with the corporate, you know, its inherent inability to deliver innovation into the world. It's not supposed to be there. You know, there's a business to protect, not a new one to kind of foster. So I find myself, you know, on this kind of as a rebel with a cause, you know, a bit of a business anarchist. I'm like, you know, good, you know, we can't, we, you know, if they can create the plan, you know, compose the team and secure the millions from the investors, there's nothing stopping them. Go for it.
Yeah, rebel with a cause sounds really good. Maya, you had something to add here.
Something on, I also think that, you know, like one thing that people usually don't necessarily recognize is the meaning of this design when like utilizing the technology to kind of like enable those changes. Because like technology on its own is really nothing. It's like just the carriage without the horse, you know, because it's not brought anywhere. It's just there. It doesn't serve anything. It doesn't deliver anything. It's nothing for nobody. But then once you kind of like package it somehow that it serves a purpose, it's already design. It's that is already the meaning of design, that, you know, like you're channeling something to people, and it's always somehow people. Like everything that we have in here is somehow people centric. So packaging technologies into something that can be served to people, it's always design. And I think it's very inspirational that people don't usually even recognize the design is there. So they just think that, okay, that's just usual business. But yeah, like there are always some creative people who are capable of practicing design even without knowing that. So I think that's super inspiring.
I was thinking that maybe it would be interesting to talk about the elements that are needed for making a change. And you said that then change is happening in the growth companies, but not in the corporate world, like the traditional companies. And for making a change, design is needed. What else? What are the other elements that then are required?
This just to maybe comment a little bit on what Lotta said about these growth companies. I totally agree, especially today. I mean, that was not maybe the case like 10 or 20 years ago. That's there right. was still like innovation in the bigger companies and corporations. But now when everything is so optimized, it's kind of like that's maybe a little bit answering to your question that what else is needed. It's like some freedom, like some free space, unknown paths, some curiosity, something that is not written in the script yet. So it's very exciting when you start thinking about that. That's really like the common nominator between like art and design and science. It's like, okay, we're just going to areas where nobody has been before. We can't guarantee the result, so we just need to explore. And then that's sort of like this optimization and ultimate focus, efficiency. That's the biggest enemy. Like, of course, that's needed, but we just have to admit that is the ultimate enemy for the real innovation, actually. And therefore, it sort of creates, this is kind of like the silver lining, that it sort of creates this real ecosystem thinking that when the corporations are working the way they are, so that, okay, everything is very optimized, everybody's just thinking about the next quarter results, you know, maybe their next promotion or something, the teams are very, very tight. It's like everybody's just so busy in executing what they need to deliver this month. So that means that then the startups, the growth companies, actually have a real role in this equation, that, okay, you need this kind of building block that brings the new blood into the businesses.
And do you feel that then there should be more also cooperation between the startups and then these more kind of bigger companies?
I think it's more important than ever. I mean, it has always been there, but now it seems to be the vital only way almost. That like in order to kind of like have real innovation in the big corporations, you sort of need to have like a mature enough startup that has already grown themselves so far that, you know, like it doesn't need this so much of the uncertainty anymore. That the uncertainty is already done, and then you plug it in, and then it can start living its like a next chapter.
And what about then, there are new innovations, technologies, ideas, problems worth solving. How do you develop these into then successful businesses? Are there any tricks?
So I mean, you know, I love it how Maya, you started this, that you need the space to imagine, isn't it? Because, you know, if you're just executing, you never have time to dream or wonder like, why? You know, why is this way? Why can't, or how might we, or this sort of things. And you know, once you have had that space to think, I do believe that, you know, leaders can set, you know, bold visions. You know, you can really create a grand vision. And then something that is compelling that people are attracted to, you know, that who want to kind of work towards. Mm-hmm. And then you need to, as you know, as a leader, you need to empower the people to, you know, go and do it. Set them free. And then when you set them free, you know, then you know, set them free in a way that they're also accountable, you know, that they need to deliver the results where, you know, the bar is high, you know, that you want to kind of achieve.
Yeah. Mm. But I also remember, you know, this one picture of like, you know, like a people running at the, like you have a skyscraper that there's like no fence at the, you're at the rooftop. Yes. And you're just, people are just running around. Yeah. But what do? You're just going to stay at the very center because nobody wants to go to the borders. But yeah. Then like once you actually have a fence that you have somehow like made a context.
Yes.
That you've somehow like already like given a context and just give like some frames. Suddenly you can be actually very, very creative, that you can just take the whole space.
Yeah.
You can be like a totally free. So also like this, this kind of like, this is also something that I feel that is very important for the leaders to kind of like show where we're going, what we're doing, why we're doing this. You're good. You're like free to go. You're safe.
Yes.
So you can.
Safe.
Mm. So you can. Yeah. You can dream.
Yes.
You
yes.
can imagine.
Yes.
That's like so important, like a role for the yeah. leaders.
Mm. Yeah.
So to become a successful business, you have to concentrate on the people that you have and give them the freedom then to imagine or be creative or, I don't know, to be curious.
Yeah. Yeah. As well as the resources to actually get the job done.
Yeah. Mm. Mm. Do you have any favorite failures? Because of course there's always this thing that people are saying that that from failures you learn the most. So can you share us any stories on failures and a favorite one?
I joined VTT 7 years ago, close to 7 years ago. And VTT is a, you know, applied research organization. So if you're a research organization, failures, you know, you need to embrace failure, isn't it? Because a good part of research is actually failing at what you wanted to achieve, and that's how you learn. So at VTT, we actually have an event organized by the young professionals called the Gala of Failures, annual Ooh. Gala.
Wow.
The Gala of Failures. A little bit of a sidetrack, you know, we have there's the competition, and then there's the competition between the invited speakers. So 2021 Gala Failures winner on the guest speakers. So that was a great honor. But, you know, the great failure is actually linked to something that is actually quite a great success until now also. So I joined VTT to set up VTT Launchpad, the spin-off incubator. And so far we have spun off not a large amount of companies. There's 15 startups originating from VTT Launchpad. And their market value at the moment is €500 million.
Mm. Not too bad.
With two first-of-a-kind factories being built currently, you know? So not the pilot scale anymore, but really industrial scale. Why I call it my favorite failure is that when I was brought in, we had a really tight schedule. So we had to deliver as we were designing. So I called it that, you know, I was running with my colleague Tiia-Maria Jaakkola, you know, and you know, I have a stick in one hand that has a pencil at its end, and I have another stick in the other hand with an eraser, and we're running, and I'm drawing, I'm erasing, I'm running, and you know, and when you're doing something like this, clearly you're going to have quite a few puddles on the way, you know, blunders and fall over, you know, and step on someone's toe, you know, and draw on someone's wall. Ooh, sorry, you know. Yeah. And so I was very lucky to have the full backing of our CEO at the time, Antti Vasara, you know, who would always, you know, when the blunders were big, he would always back me up because they always landed, of course, on his desk. You know, as they do, you know, when someone gets angry and, you know, who do they call? You know, they call the CEO.
So you got people angry?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Also.
Yeah. And that was part of the failure part, even though that then, you know, the launchpad has been successful.
Yes.
Otherwise.
Yes. Mm. But, you know, in Finnish you say rapatessa roisku, you know, and you know, what I promised with every single time that there was a, you know, blunder, we didn't see that coming. Now we saw it. We know we're not going to do that again. And we have not repeated those failures. Mm.
Then, of course, the question is that what actually even is the failure? Because, you know, this is also one of my favorite sayings, that like the only way to really fail is to refuse from help. Because there's always someone who is able to come out. If you just think about like whatever stupid things you did, you usually just did it all by yourself, you know? Like there would have been someone who would have up all the answers for you. But you were just like, oh no, I'm too busy, or I'm too proud, I'm too this or that. So sort of kind of like usually it's that. Because I kind of think that, you know, like there are wrong paths for sure. But, you know, like again, just coming back to this uncertainty, we just need to cover those paths. Otherwise, we wouldn't know. Like, how would you know if you just don't go there? Okay, you see, like, okay, this was not the route, at least. So let's go back. Yes. So was that a failure? Not really. So it's more like sort of kind of like learnings. So in certain way, yeah. I mean, I think that we should maybe have like some new vocabulary in there. That what is really like? Does failure mean that you're kind of like you learn in a good way? And what is then when you didn't learn, you were just kind of like making some mistakes. So anyways, it's all about these wordings as well.
Now we can maybe move into the question of how has IDBM influenced your career path? You have you're an alumni of IDBM. How do you see this what has been the influence of IDBM to your career?
Well, I mean, IDBM actually influenced my career very much even before I started my studies, because it was kind of like I really still remember when I saw first, like I was just I was a little bit lost, you know, like what should I do? And like, what's really my thing? So I had been studying music and I was very interested in many kinds of things. But I just knew that there's something that is waiting for me, but I just can't tell what exactly is it. I was considering architecture and many other things, but then I just saw like maybe it was some brochure or something about IDBM, and then when I started reading that, I was like, that's exactly what I have been meaning all the time. So then I went to the interview that was part of this examinations, and then they were like a little bit wondering that, okay, what are you talking that, you know, like this is some like a master's degree program that, you know, you're not just applying to the candidate program, that, you know, what is this, don't you know? It's like no, I'm just preparing already for that. So that was sort of like a self-evident thing for me, and I'm very, very happy that I actually had the courage to really continue that path, that, you know, because of course you could always just sort of be influenced by something else and then just go to some other route. But I really very, very strongly felt that this interdisciplinary thing was really just like so much better than anything else before that. So it's self-evident, and I kind of like say that because it's I always have maybe felt a little bit that I'm kind of like not very easy. I'm not the person who very easily just kind of like plugs into a like a certain type or kind of like a sapluun, you know? Mm. So that everybody is like a little bit different and who is doing what and what's your speciality and so on. So I really felt that, you know, this diversity was like inspiring me a lot. Yes. From IDBM.
There have been also others who have been talking about this, that IDBM students traditionally are a little bit outliers. Mm. A bit kind of outsider, so that's what combines them, so that they think a bit differently and maybe kind of don't see themselves fitting into a certain place. And then that's the uniting theme.
Exactly. And then, I mean, afterwards, you know, now when I have been running these companies for quite some time, I have also hired quite many IDBMers after that. So it's usually like, you know, if there's someone who is applying, and then if there would be two candidates who are like equally good, you know, I would absolutely pick the one who has done the IDBM, because I would know that okay, you went through that. So we know. And then of course we've been also doing this industry projects and so on. That has been also really great.
Yeah.
So also hiring people from the projects and so on. So. Mm-hmm. It's also like from that angle, it's really great. So not just my own sort of like my own career, but also how I have been able to sort of like foster the other people's careers.
As we know, our economy hasn't grown in quite many years, some more than 20 years after the Nokia growth. But how do you see that? How could Finland's long-term competitiveness be strengthened? What are there any kind of magic tricks, or how can it be done?
Well, everybody knows that, everybody who has been reading the news know that, you know, startups are already as important as a pulp and paper to the economy. So maybe that first of all tells something, that like dare to take those chances, and then of course like somehow we need to have enough resources for the startups. I think that this is a major question. That, like, you know, all of these amazing startups that, you know, like Lotta is nurturing from the incubator. Okay, so if they really may come with a really, really brilliant concepts and amazing game-changing technologies with brilliant teams taking that to the market. But then, okay, what happens suddenly is like there's some kind of like a... like downturn on the VC market and the funding is not easy. Okay, and then the startup just disappears. Yeah. So that is something that, you know, we shouldn't let happening. Yeah. That these are like so important building blocks of the future economy that they really, really need to be strengthened in an appropriate way. And I mean, of course, we have like for example, Business Finland has been doing a lot of work for that. And that is something that is really, really unique. That, you know, like whenever you go anywhere and just tell about that, okay, this is how we're doing it, people are usually like astonished that, okay, is this really the case that, you know, that like you can actually get this type of development money? Because, you know, the same optimization is going everywhere in the society. Mm. Like, for example, if you just look at like the venture capital funds, yes, well, there was this like a little wave of the impact funds, but quite often, quite many of those impact funds are not doing impact anymore. They are sort of back to the quick wins, like they are hoping to have like quick wins from AI or so. So like these kind of development cycles, they just go against this like quick fast returns logic. Mm. So this is like long-term support for like a science and a creativity and this kind of work is absolutely needed.
So it takes time.
It always takes time. And at the same time, I mean, it takes time does not mean that you're doing things that don't matter, or that you're doing things that are kind of like a waste of time, or you're just having fun or anything like that. It's not about that. But more also to kind of like recognize that if you're developing groundbreaking technologies and groundbreaking businesses, like, you know, like for example, my company Onico Bio, we're working on the egg business. Okay, $300 billion business, and it's broken. Mm. So it just tells something. Okay, we have IP here in Finland for something like that, and that cannot be done anywhere else. There's no other place in the world that knows how to do this.
So it's very unique.
It's very unique extremely functional and efficient and very, very promising. So sort of like, I think that we would need to have like more that kind of cases here in Finland.
Where do we get the funding then? Okay, we need resources. How do we get the resources? Maybe you can, Lotta, answer this. Do you have any ideas on
well,
how to get enough resources?
I mean, if you look at Finland or EU-wide, I mean, we're not short of resources. It's just how we have chosen to allocate those. So there's, of course, been quite a bit of discussion on the pension funds, for example, that how they invest in, how much they invest into VC funds is not even a rounding error for them currently. And if you would triple that, it would still not be a rounding error, but would make a massive difference on the investable capital. So I mean, you know, as a society and Europe wide, we need to kind of, you know, if we want to have a strong resilience also on the technology side, and independence on the self-resourcefulness on the technology side, we need to invest into letting it grow. You know, so these are unpleasant choices that, you know, or, you know, choices always unpleasant to make, you know, because it requires thinking and changing ways and, you know.
And is there also this risk avoidance, not only optimization, but then that they don't want to take any risk with the investment?
Well, you know, if you think of, you know, that it would still not be, if we're looking at the pension funds, it would not still not be a rounding error, you know. For them, the risk would not be recognizable.
Right.
You know?
What is really nice in Finland is that, you know, like we have this very serious fact-based basic culture that like we really like to tell the truth. We are very, very like we are like honored to be like a true to the facts and so on. So it's like very different than this like paint the sky blue and, you know, like a fake it till you make it a style of like a doing business, which is actually great in this current economic situation. That, you know, like people are trusting the Finns. People see that okay, like this is it's not just, you know, like, oh, just a bold vision, but it's like really like a bold vision backed by facts.
Yes.
So that's a like a bold vision 2 in a row almost, you know, that you can kind of like you can really it's very much this like a deep tech way of doing things. When the scientists are on board, you know, like they have like no bandwidth for this kind of like a faking anything. So that's sort of kind of like it's really like a sort of like built into the profession that they want to be like a true to what are their skills and so on. So I think that's kind of like, you know, we should maybe forget this whole old stupid phrase that, oh, you know, we are so bad in marketing anything and so on. Okay, maybe not this today's world is ready for our style of marketing things. So let's just go bolder with that. So that's one. And then the other thing is that we also have to think about, like, how do we raise our kids? That, like, why the brightest minds from different universities would always just be, like, searching for paid jobs in corporations and just kind of like start collecting these brands in the CV. So this is also something that, you know, like traditionally here in Finland, for example, you know, people actually like to stay much, much longer in the workplaces where they have chosen. So that's a huge strength. Like if you're just building something that is so long, it's almost like a long term, and so much more serious and like much more difficult and everything, you really need to have these people staying there for many, many years. It's like if people are just changing every 6 months, you know, you can't get anywhere.
And this is really a true handicap that we see, for example, in Silicon Valley. There's always, people are always just like buying and selling, you know, like their next promotion. So it's like if you get like a little bit higher salary somewhere, you're just gone next morning. So this is something that we can also like count on. That like, for example, if I'm just thinking about my company, you know, we haven't had like anybody leaving so far. We've been now doing this for almost 4 years, and the team is still the same, and everybody is 100% on board. So it kind of like tells that, you know, you can really rely on these things. But anyways, I mean, maybe you have seen, but this startup handbook that Timo and Jure just made. That was the number one bestseller. Was it in Akateeminen? It's like the number one.
I noticed that in LinkedIn that they've been selling a lot.
So maybe that kind of like tells that, you know, this ideology has been like a little bit now taking wings and just kind of like, you know, I think that it's like a challenge for each and every parent that, you know, like if your kid wants to be a founder, never say that, okay, when are you planning to apply for a real job at some point? Like, that's like the worst thing ever that you could tell to your kid.
Yeah, and there was also in the previous discussions that I have been having talk about skill accumulation and the importance of having certain skill set, and especially that you can be a generalist in many things, know a lot about everything, and that's important, but then you have to have a certain area which you know a lot about, and then you actually have something to give in this interdisciplinary setup. And I kind of feel that's a good thinking, because for the younger kids it's important to say that you do need that in order to give something to the table when you are in this setup. I don't know if you have had any ideas on this kind of deep expertise, skill accumulation.
But the deep expertise also does not need to be like, okay, I'm an astrophysicist. You know,
it doesn't need to be that.
So it also could be that, you know, like, for example, my deep skill is, well, my deep skill is definitely like running companies and building teams. But that sort of kind of like is very much, of course, like a broader skill as well. Well, creativity also could be my deep skill. Yeah. Problem solve, whatever.
Yeah.
But anyways, it's kind of like I think that like in general, you know, in the interdisciplinary teamwork, basically all kinds of people are needed. So you just sort of like maybe even more than to have those is to recognize what you have, to know what really are your strengths.
About creativity, does creativity then translate into economic value, or does it, or how does it?
This is now already leaning towards our secret club thing,
but this is
really like a kind of like a favorite topic in that sense, that sort of like quite often people don't really understand or recognize that creativity really is very much into this value creation. Value creation means more value, means higher profits, and so on and so on. So sort of kind of like being a designer, running business, you're actually very much into the actual value creation. So designing how businesses work, that's as much design as designing, for example, some objects. So we kind of like, if I may just reveal in here, so we have this this kind of like a little how would I say, like a thought that we have been nurturing, that if there would be this kind of like a club of designers who never sort of who don't always reveal that they're actually designers, that they're kind of like, you just like, when people are asking what's your background, you just say, oh, business background.
Innovation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and then
designers. Are you closet designers?
We're closet designers. So kind of like only when somebody's really, really, really scratching the surface, you're like, okay, I'm a designer, because that's sort of like somehow we're still like. I mean, I have to say that this is something that if somebody would have told this like 20 years ago, that really we're still 2025, we're still in this situation. That, you know, it's kind of like need to a little bit like you need to justify why designers have a place in this.
I would have been laughing that it can't be possible. You know, like we were already like at the brink of a breakthrough to make design like more like a business credible discipline. But apparently we're still in there. And I've heard many people say like, you know, it's better to talk about the customer understanding and market insights and things like that. Yep. That sort of like gets this understanding.
Mm. But your secret club, does it have meetings? Or is it just still an idea?
No, it also has had meetings, yes.
What do you discuss in these meetings?
Just breathing more freely, I would say.
Okay, that's nice. Maybe through this podcast you can find more members to your
club. Oh yes, we cordially invite all the closet designers who don't always reveal that they're actually designers when they're talking to business people.
Yes.
Right, that's good. And also maybe is it not only to business people, but anyone in kind of in startup business, technology, legal, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, of course, sort of kind of like the requirement for the entry of this club is kind of like that you sort of are, you are a leader or you're thinking about to be some kind of a leader. Mm. So you're sort of like willing and capable of like handling larger entities and looking at things like from the big picture perspective.
Mm. So what are then the superpowers of these designers or closet designers or designers in general? Or do you see that there are also other capabilities and powers that could be utilized in business world?
So, you know, observing people is nice. That's what I've been trying to stutter here. So observing people is nice. And a long time ago working at Philips, there was a senior colleague who walked into a workshop room and there was a massive kind of a printout on the table from a material that was clearly new to him. And he walked to the end of the table. You know, it was rolled out, you know, and he was like, you know, this massive printout. And he goes and he starts flopping because he's doing a material study. Started turning it. He's observing it closer. He's flopping it again, you know, from another, you know, and he's bending it, you know, he's stretching it, you know. And somehow I have this, you know, this vision in my mind. You know, I will never forget this because this was creativity at work. He's doing material study. He sees, okay, this thing was printed on it. What can I do? What is this good for? How could I apply this? What else can I make out of this? You know, of course, he's doing all this thinking in his mind. But I'm a junior there, you know, so I can do what, you know, I'm observing, you know, him do this. And so this is what I think that the great value in creativity is asking. Not declaring, but asking, being inquisitive. So you know, exploring constantly, you know, and of course we have from the textbook, how might we, you know, but there are other things, you know, so rather than taking the mantra and repeating that, being curious, being open-minded, exploring, you know, not taking in what is said, this is how things are, this is how it's always been done, you know, or this. You know, when I joined VTT, there was a whole bunch of like things how spin-off companies were harmful for VTT. And then I started collecting the data on those. As soon as I had kind of bandwidth and I had access to data, I started collecting data. And I was busting those myths one after the other because there were things that people felt this is the way. And that's all right. You're entitled to a feeling. However, in the light of facts, this is not true, you know? And I think this is, you know, so rather than being this expert who knows, through creativity, you have the opportunity to wonder and ask and be curious. And that's where the future value lies.
Can you recommend any books or resources or people to follow that have influenced your perspective on innovation or change or business thinking or anything like this?
So I thought of, I actually realized that there are two books that that have been very insightful, or somehow opened my eyes or ears or whatever, made me aware, more aware, maybe given me also kind of tools or ways of working. It's already a long time ago, maybe 15 mm. years ago, I don't know when. Maybe about 15 years ago, and maybe I even got it as a gift from someone, The Art of Possibility by Benjamin Sanders, who was at least at the time a conductor at the Boston Philharmonic. And his wife, Rosamund Stone Sander. And together they wrote this book, very much, you know, building, of course, on her kind of professional know-how, but very much embodying Benjamin Sanders' experience as a conductor and as a leader. It was striking that from this book, I learned that actually one of the at the time at least, that the unhappiest professions was a musician in a symphony orchestra, because the leadership methods there were very much commanding and very much, very little of listening and engaging. So there was a lot of unhappiness, and he was kind of reflecting on this and his ways of working together with the musicians as a leader, as the conductor. And so some of the methods from, you know, one of them that I think, and of course my memory might have, you know, done funny things on me over the years, but one of the methods I use constantly still in my, you know, or use constantly in my current work is, you know, on his way of collecting feedback. Mm-hmm. You know? And very simple three questions.
That's good. Three questions.
Three questions. What should I continue doing? What should I stop doing? And what should I start doing? Or should, what should we, you know? As a guidance, you know? And this is something that we use as a feedback, for example, in our incubation activities currently. So that was, you know, but there are many other things that I found very insightful. But the other one then is, you know, one that many you will hear referring to, which is Daniel Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow. And that, of course, you know, is, you know, when we're kind of dealing with complex matters where that require quite a bit of cognitive power to kind of make sense of, you know, then how do you stay aware that, you know, your mind has a tendency to look for those shortcuts and, you know, find the quick answers, and how to remember that, you know, I'm a lazy individual, you know, and I have a tendency to do this, you know, and how might I force myself and my colleagues and everyone else, you know, to, you know, how do we lure ourselves to do the hard work of really thinking deeply about complex matters?
Yeah, that's very topical at the moment when thinking about how AI is changing the way we are working and thinking, that then maybe that offers us the kind of the lure of fast answers.
Yes. Yeah.
Nice. Very nice tips. So Art of Possibility and Thinking Fast and Slow. Yeah, that's good. Any other kind of any tips for listeners who are interested in creating a startup? Do you have some thoughts on this?
Yeah, so it's very important that you have a great founding team. That is absolutely the most important thing for a startup. It's even much more important than any business idea that you may have or any technology that you're working on and so on, because everything else can be evolving and will be evolving, but the team with its strengths and weaknesses will be there. It's unfortunately very difficult to change the founding team. I mean, of course, sometimes something like that happens as well, but it's very painful. And also, like, you know, these are going to be the people who are, you're going to really be sort of married with. So you really, really need to feel comfortable with them. And at the same time, you need to feel comfortable with people who are totally different than you. So try to pick people who are not at all the same. So that's sort of like a trap, because we're usually always feeling so much better with the people who are just like ourselves. And then when you know that it's actually possible, it's better, but it's also possible to try to find people who are like very different in their way of like justifying things and approaching things. But you can still have fun with them, and you know, like you can have like a similar sense of humor, for example, and a completely different way of seeing the world. Yes. So that's absolutely the best possible combination.
That's great. Lotta, what about you? What thoughts do you have on this?
So, I have nothing to add on this team perspective. I mean, that is the core of it. Without that, there is no success. Without the fantastic team. And that is, of course, the most difficult bit, you know, as human beings, and how do we deal with one another in the right way? Yeah. And how do we kind of go through with also the painful decisions of, you know, making sure that you're working with the best possible team? I would add to that then, you know, that the power of imagination, imagining that great success, you know, imagining the great success. I think anything you can imagine and you can describe, you can start working out the plan of how to do it. But if you can't imagine the great success, you will never have a great plan. You know, there's no way of creating a successful plan without a vision of success. And you know, I guess our imagination is only the limit of what we can, you know, create. So once you have that, then bit by bit, you will be able to create those steps towards it, even if you don't know exactly how. But just having that vision, taking step by step, you know, and openly embracing the uncertainty and doing it with the team, you know, step by step, and collecting your learnings, and making sure that you also use what you learned, you know, I think will bring you far.
And also, you both talked about this earlier, that when everything is too optimized, nothing new happens, there is no change coming, and you need freedom, space to imagine, curiosity, but then also accountability.
Yes.
And some framework.
Yeah.
So that then you don't go all over the place. I guess
that's
this
right.
Applies also to kind of startup business.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
Our time is up. Do you have any final thoughts that you would like to share?
I actually have one. I think that this could be still like a part of that list that, like, you know, we're so attached now to the AI, and you just quickly get your answers from there. But also just remember that you also have your own AI right here. You can actually give it some assignments. You can give it a prompt. It's like, I need a solution for this. And just wait and see what happens. If you say like, okay, in like a couple of days, I would like to have a solution for this. And it brings you that. It's not in a couple of seconds, but it's maybe in a couple of days. And it can actually solve quite abstract things. So I think it's really exciting.
Yeah, so give your brain a possibility to think. That's nice. Thank you very much for the discussion. It was really fruitful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Irina.
Thank you for listening. I am your host, Irina Viippola. This episode was edited by me and Aditya Parekh, and produced by the IDBM program at Aalto University. Mä vähän sieltä pikkasen leikkailen poiskin.
Totta
ja sitten tiivistän pikkusen ja vähän sitten tiivistää siellä ja muuta, että katsotaan miten mä saan sitten editoitua.